Hello, quackheads. We're glad you waddled your way on down to paranormal quacktivity. Let's
You
quack
need to
into it.
leave. You need to leave. Because that shouldn't be that funny.
Alright, let's quack into it. I'm Justin.
I'm Drake.
And I am so excited to see what we're going to get into today. Are you ready? Are you ready, Drake?
Actually, I'm not. Twist of events. Oh, I've also been reading a good book. Do you want to know which book?
I'd love to know.
The Butcher and the Wren.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fantastic.
It is so far. I think I'm chapter 17. And I started reading it, what's today? Saturday. I started reading it Thursday afternoon, and it's hard to put down. It's a really good book. It's a really good book. Elena put her fucking foot in that book.
You have got to be kidding me.
Elena put her fucking foot in that book. I'm telling you, Justin.
I have been reading that book for 3 days, and you're on chapter 17.
Well, the chapters aren't, like, really, really long, but they're not, like, they're, like...
Okay, but still, you don't read. I mean, what?
I love that you recognize this about me. But it's just so good. Maybe because I know it's Elena's work. And like,
well, I don't doubt it. I'm gonna have to get my own copy because, oh my gosh. Wow.
So far it's really good.
Wow. Congratulations, Elena. Congratulations, Morbid.
You got this motherfucker to read?
Wow. That's amazing.
And so it's just, I cannot wait. I'm sad that I'm gonna eventually finish the book. So, well, do you want to guess what we're doing? What we're going to be talking about today?
Oh gosh, is it an alien abduction?
Close. I'm gonna say close. You're in the ballpark.
Is it a cult?
You know, no. I think it's too early for that.
I think I just went really far off when you said I was in the ballpark and I started playing a different sport. No. Wait, one more guess. Let me think. Is it a cryptid?
I don't know what that word means.
Okay, I give up.
Bigfoot.
Oh! Wow! Okay. Bigfoot is a cryptid. So, I'm not an expert. I don't know, like, the definition, but a cryptid is basically, like, a legend. Or like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, like a myth.
So is the word a cryptid, or you're saying a cryptid?
Like a cryptid. The cryptid.
Okay, cryptid. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be talking about Bigfoot today and like some things that go along with it.
I am so excited right now. I cannot wait.
Okay, so let's get right into it.
Let's quack into it.
Okay, so Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch, is a purported ape-like creature that is set to inhabit the forests of North America. Now, the very first question I had, is it big feet or Bigfoots? Plural of Bigfoot. Bigfoots or big feet?
That's a very good question.
What do you think?
You know, I think that it's up to interpretation. And if we take things literally, then he probably just has one very large foot. And he's just hopping around the forest on it.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
I think it's Bigfoot's, but...
Okay, yeah.
So Bigfoot is described as a bipedal ape-like creature with... either black, brown, or reddish hair. There are some descriptions that say that he or she is between 6 to 9 feet tall, and other sources say that big feet tend to be between 10 and 15 feet. And so I was thinking 6 to 9 feet and 10 to 15 feet, I feel like those are two very different, I think they're very noticeable differences.
That is quite the range, I have to say. So, I know a lot of people that are over six foot.
Yeah, I mean, I know a couple of people over 6 foot. I don't know anyone who's 10 feet tall. But anyway, I feel like I would know, like, how big 10 feet is.
Right.
Anyway, Bigfoot is also described as being between 600 and 900 pounds. Which wow. is, 300 pounds is a lot. Mm-hmm. 300 pounds is a lot. Anyway. So other common descriptions also include broad shoulders, no visible neck, and long arms. He is known to beat his chest and let go of a blood-curdling scream. And he is also said, it is said that he smells like a skunk that rolled around in dead bodies.
Oh my gosh, wow. He smells like a dead fucking body? That's disgusting.
I believe a skunk. Have you ever smelled a skunk? Have you ever hit a skunk?
Ew, no, but I have smelled a skunk. That's nasty.
Agreed. I don't know. Oh, yes, actually, I do. So I was doing some research, and actually, the word Sasquatch comes from the Chehalis word Sasquets, which means hairy man. So it was like when people got their hands on it and they couldn't pronounce Sasquatch, they just changed it to Sasquatch. Sasquatches. Okay, anyway.
Huh.
So now we're going to talk about the origin of the name Bigfoot. So in 1958, Jerry Crew, a logging company bulldozer operator in Humboldt County, California, discovered a set of large 410 millimeter or 16 inch human-like footprints sunk deep within the mud in the Six Rivers National Forest. Upon informing his coworkers, many claim that to have seen similar tracks on previous job sites, as well as telling other coworkers. And they were talking about seeing instances of this big hairy creature throwing oil drums that weighed about 450 pounds. And they've also said that they've seen these barrels shifted with no explanation.
Okay, I hate to be a critic, but why on earth would Bigfoot be moving big barrels? Like, this just seems very unlikely that he would have, like, come out of the woods and, like, picked up. Or maybe the barrel was in his way. They put it, I don't know, but.
Let's be optimistic.
Okay.
You know, that is a good question. Why are you just moving barrels? Like, and doing nothing else?
What if that was just, like, a really hairy worker? Like an axeman, you know?
Yeah, it's like an axeman.
And he was just moving his barrels.
Absolutely. So upon having, like, seen these things moved with, like, no explanation, the logging company men soon started using the term Bigfoot to describe the mysterious culprit. Some which they have never seen, in my opinion. So Jerry Crew, who initially believed someone was playing a prank on them, once again observed more of these big footprints. And then he contacted a reporter by the name of Andrew Genzoli. That sounds Italian. Andrew Genzoli of the Humboldt Times newspaper. Genzoli interviewed lumber workers and wrote articles about, like, the mysterious footprints. And this is the first time we see the word Bigfoot used in relation to the tracks and the local tales of a large, hairy, wild man. Now, a plaster cast was made of the footprints, and Crew appeared holding one of the casts on the front page of the newspaper on October 6, 1958. And once this story got out, I guess it, like, spread like wildfire, and it made its way to New York and the Los Angeles Times. And as a result, the term Bigfoot has become widespread for a reference to describe a large, hairy, unknown creature with massive footprints in Northern California.
Wait, so now we're in Northern California.
Yes, Humboldt County is in Northern California. I probably should have said that.
Oh, okay.
So this man was
That's
in Northern
very
California.
interesting. That's very interesting. Wow. And he had the proof. He had the proof in the pudding, the proof in the plaster.
He had the proof in the plaster, absolutely. So here's where like my optimism like starts to dwindle. So in 2002, the family of Jerry Crew's deceased co-worker Ray Wallace stated that their father had been secretly making the large footprints with carved wooden feet, and that he was responsible for the tracks.
Oh no.
Despite the Wallace's family statement, Willow Creek in Humboldt County are considered by some to be the Bigfoot capital of the world.
Wow.
So a man that was working
Interesting.
with Jerry Crew was making these footprints, or at least his family says that that's what was happening.
I mean, I feel like it's possible that it could have been a little bit of that, and also that he, like, initially the one that he found could have been real, but then people were like, oh, we want more proof. And he was like, well, I'll give you more proof. Come to my mystery shack and
And that he did.
pay me 25 cents and I'll show you a Bigfoot.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's talk about the first sightings of Bigfoot. So according to Live Science, there have been over 10,000 reported Bigfoot sightings in the continental United States. And about one-third of those claims of Bigfoot sightings are located in the Pacific Northwest, with the remaining reports spread throughout the rest of America. Most reports are considered mistakes or hoaxes, even by those researchers who claim that Bigfoot is real. So one third of 10,000 of these reports happen in the Pacific Northwest. So isn't that like Washington and Oregon and places like
Yeah,
that?
like Northern California, yeah.
And then the other two-thirds is spread out across America. So many of the indigenous cultures across North America, across the North American continent, included tales of a mysterious hair-covered creature living in the forest. And according to anthropologist David Daigling, I think that's how you say his name, David Daigling, these legends existed long before the contemporary reports of Bigfoot. So we had these indigenous people who already had these stories and these tales of like this large hairy person living in the forests, which I think is terrifying.
Wow,
Which
that
is
is terrifying.
on the Tule River Native American Reservation in California, petroglyphs created by a tribe of Yokuts, I think that's how you say that, at a site called Painted Rock are alleged by some to depict a group of Bigfoot called the family. The local tribes people call the largest of the glyphs Hairy Man, and they are estimated to be between 500 and 1,000 years old. And also, 16th century Spanish explorers and Mexican settlers in California told tales of Los Vigilantes Oscuros, or the
Oh.
dark. I know I felt really exquisite saying it. Or dark watchers, large creatures alleged to stalk their camps at night. In the region, which is now Mississippi, French Jesuit priest was living with the Natchez in 1972 and reported stories of hairy creatures in the forests known to scream loudly and to steal wild stock, I mean livestock.
Oh my gosh, wow, you really just took me on a journey there. At first, I was like, wow, that's so cute. Hairy man and his hairy wife and his hairy baby.
And his hairy
But
kids, hairy dog.
yeah, hairy dog. But then it was like they're stalking them while they eat, and that's no bueno. But
That's no
then
bueno.
they're screaming in the woods, which like same, but not what you want to hear when you're camping. So
That should be a band name. Screaming in the woods.
screaming in the woods. I totally agree, TM.
Okay. So, talking about other sightings, scientists looked at a map of all the reported Bigfoot sightings in America to get like an idea of like the population density. And what they notice is that majority of the sightings took place on the west, but a good bit also took place on the east. So like on our side of the country. Looking for an explanation, I think they decided to compare the density of sightings to that of the average rainfall in America. And what they found is that the more rainfall that an area had, there tended to be more Bigfoot sightings or alleged spottings of the Bigfoot or Big Feet. And one of the scientists concluded that there was a strong correlation between the amount of rain and the amount of sightings that took place.
Okay.
So okay. I think if I remember correctly, like on the map, most of like the rainfall was on the West Coast and a good bit was on the East Coast. And most of all of the Bigfoot sightings come from those sides of the country. There aren't really like many Bigfoot sightings in like the central part of America, which I find like weird.
Well, I guess that makes sense. Like, if this is like a real, if this is a creature, you know, it's gonna go to one side or the other. Like, for example, there are different types of trees on, like, there are East Coast oak trees and there are West Coast oak trees. And, like, there maybe there's like an East Coast Sasquatch and a West Coast Sasquatch, you know.
But I was, I was thinking, they were saying that if these creatures were to, like, be surviving in the forests and the wilderness, they would need water. And I guess they're saying that, like, the rainfall allows them to have water.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe they just like it. They like the humidity. They're like, maybe they're like Shrek.
Maybe they're like Shrek. You have to stop doing that.
I'm sorry.
We have to leave that in. Anyway, so one of my notes I put, so no big feats in Colorado.
Oh, wait, is that true? But there's like, they get rain in Colorado. There's mountains there, Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, but it's like Central America.
Is it?
Justin, do not. I'm pretty sure it is. Colorado is Central America.
I'm pretty sure Colorado is like above Arizona. It's like almost. It's like almost being like. Or no, it's above like Nevada. I think I said that wrong. Or maybe it's beside Nevada.
We're about to find out. Okay, so I would say it's.
There's no Bigfoot in Kansas.
Absolutely. Let's say that. No Bigfoot in Kansas.
No Bigfoot in Kansas. No Bigfoots.
So Justin, let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a video of Bigfoot? Like a video?
I honestly can say yes, I have seen a video of Bigfoot.
Okay. So that video is probably the Patterson-Gimlin film. Now, the most famous video of an actual Bigfoot, air quote, is called the Patterson-Gimlin film. Now, Bob Gimlin and Roger Patterson were strolling through the mountains in Bluff Creek, California, on October 20th, 1967, at around 2 o'clock. One of the men, I'm not sure which one of the men spotted a lady Bigfoot walking and looking at them from over the creek bed. This caused Roger's horse to like fall on top of him. And as soon as he was able to get up, he got his camera and he began to film. And they said that they began filming when they were around 125 feet away, but they eventually were able to get closer, around like 81 feet. And you can see the Bigfoot turn around and look at them, which I think is very scary. This video is very iconic, but it is also very controversial. Roger told author, anthropologist, and Bigfoot enthusiast, Dr. Grover Krantz. It, quote, "It looked at me with an expression of contempt and disgust that I just stayed right there." End quote. While this was happening, Gimlin was on his horse riding and holding his rifle in case of him, like, in case the big lady came after them. And after the quote-unquote animal left, they created plaster casts of the footprints by the creek bed.
Okay, so this is another plaster cast situation.
Yeah.
And, I'm sorry, did you say what time this was? Like, what
around
date?
2 o'clock.
Date? What date?
October 20th, 1967.
1967, and then the other sighting was when?
The other sighting was, the one we just talked about, was in 1958.
1958.
Okay, so almost 10 years apart.
Very interesting. So my first reaction, of course, is how did they know that it was a lady Bigfoot?
I'm glad you asked that question.
Was it naked?
I'm glad you asked that question because I watched the video over and over and over again. And the Bigfoot, it had breasts, it looked like.
Okay, okay. I'll take your word for it. I don't think I've seen that video because the either that or I don't know, maybe I was just too young. Anyways, that's interesting.
It is interesting.
So since you watched the video over and over again, what was your impression? Do you think that it was legit?
I don't know what I think, and we'll find out a little bit later why I'm a little on the edge.
Okay.
Because basically, all this is he said, she said.
Right.
And so we'll see. So when the video first came out, people were sure that like what they actually were seeing was an actual Bigfoot. But others, they weren't like so sure. So after shooting the film, Roger actually took the film to National Wildlife Magazine. The editor, Dick Kirkpatrick, asked Patterson to take a polygraph test to cover his own ass. Because, like, if you're going to, like, submit this story, you have to have, like, some kind of proof that the person who's submitting this story is telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So Roger agreed, and he passed with flying colors. But also, a polygraph test, I feel like I could beat a polygraph.
Yeah, I don't like polygraphs. It's like, you know, how they say it's a hot blanket on a wet dog or whatever.
I've actually never heard that.
I think it's a hot dog in a trench coat or something like that.
I have heard that. A hot blanket on a wet dog.
Somebody make that into a t-shirt, please.
You know, I have so many t-shirt ideas. We should like start writing these down, actually. Let me put.
Actually, this could be another band name as well, to be honest.
What did you say? Hot blanket?
On a wet dog.
On wet dog. Okay, so after he went to Mr. Kirkpatrick, he took the polygraph and he passed. So in April of 1967, frame images from the film were printed, and that's where we get the most famous photo of Bigfoot. Now, Patterson ended up passing away in 1972, but he swore until the day he died that the video was real and that he and Bob did indeed see a Bigfoot on that day.
Wow.
Now, we also have this other man, Bill Munns is his name, and he's a costume designer and researcher that was a part of a team of people to try to figure out the authenticity of the Patterson-Gimlin film. He first started out by looking at the height, the body proportions, and the shape of the headband that would help him determine if what was on the film was actually a human or not. So he's looking at these dimensions and like the body proportions.
So he's trying to make sure that he's between 6 and 15 feet, you mean?
Absolutely. And
that he has hair all over his body.
Absolutely. He's just, that's all he's doing. Uh-huh. But he's just trying to figure out if the way it was moving, or like the proportions from like the arms and the legs, if those could be the same proportions as an actual human.
Right, but Bigfoot also, he doesn't have a neck.
He doesn't have a neck.
Yeah, so that's another determining factor.
Absolutely. And so he first used like some kind of formula to try to determine the height of the creature. It had something to do with the lens, how big the lens was versus like how far away Patterson and Gimlin were. And after his calculations, he found out that the thing in the video was only 4.5 feet tall. And I put in parentheses, not 10 feet tall.
Wow.
So he figured that some of the measurements taken back in 1967 was off. So after this, naturally, they actually went to the location and did their own investigation. So when they went up to do their investigation, the weather did not permit them to like look at it safely or whatever. And they were like in a helicopter. So they said that if they tried to like land, the helicopter could like snag on a rock. And I don't know. It was raining really bad. And I'm not taking any chances if I'm in a helicopter. So right. I get what they were doing.
Yeah.
So he theorized that the lens that Roger said he used was actually a 15 millimeter instead of a 25 millimeter lens. So after changing the numbers, he did some more calculations. And after like changing the numbers, he determined that the creature had actually been 7 feet and 4 inches tall.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a little bit better than 4.5 feet.
It's more precise. And yeah, I like that. You can't be 4.5 feet and have like giant feet, you know?
And that's what I'm thinking. It wouldn't be a Bigfoot at that point. It'd be a little foot.
It'd be a little foot, precisely.
It would be a little foot. where am I? Okay, here. He then took the time. This is like the craziest part. He took the time to build 5 different heads to compare head shapes. Non-human primates tend to have flatter foreheads, and he says the head shape on the Bigfoot that was in the video was more of like a great ape than a human forehead. And that the human head would not fit into a costume with a head shaped like the one on the video. And he then filmed each of the heads using the same film and the same kind of camera.
Okay. I mean, that tracks.
So what he did is like he set up his own like, he set the heads on like some kind of like rolling thing. And then he stood, what was it? 81 feet away from that figure. And he had someone roll the thing with the head on it. And he shot it. And I guess he was just looking at whether or not a human could have been in a suit based on just like the head configuration itself and the way it moved on the film.
So clearly this is a controlled scientific experiment. That's what you're telling me.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
This is an experiment. It's yeah. Like he had a hypothesis and he got a shotgun and he put it to the test.
Was the shotgun part like?
Didn't you say he was shooting at something?
Like he was shooting with the film. The film, Justin, the film.
You have no idea. You have no idea the image that just went through my mind when you said that I swear to God, I thought you said something with the word gun in it. And then you were like, he rolled it down the hill and he shot it. And I.
No, there was someone like wheeling the heads on a stick and he was shooting it with a camera.
I have to cut that out. That's going to be some bonus content. Okay.
That was funny. So
now that I'm back.
Okay, now that you're back,
continue. I continue.
And so you have this professor named Jeff Sedlick, who is a forensic specialist. And after watching the video, he was able to determine that the video had not been tampered with, saying like the video hadn't been edited. And one of his reasons for him saying that is that they didn't have the type of video editing equipment that we now have They didn't have that in like 1967. So like what they were filming was actually there. Whether or not it was a person in a suit or an actual Bigfoot, there was something being recorded, and that the video had not been tampered with before it was submitted to the National Wildlife Magazine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then we get to a man named Bob Hieronymus. We're just going to call him Bob Hieronymus. And if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, I'm sorry.
Hippopotamus.
And so here's where we get back to the part where which makes me very, very skeptical. Bob was interviewed, and he claims that Roger and Bob Gimlin actually paid him $1,000 for 10 minutes of work. He said the first thing he did was put his legs into the costume, and then he put his arms, and then he put the head on last. And Bob and Roger zipped him up, and then they got to work shooting the film. Bob H. said that he was super scared because he didn't want any hunters to, like, see him in this suit and then thinking that he's an actual Bigfoot and shoot him. So he claims that for 35 years, he lied and he kept it a secret. He actually pulled out the suit, and I watched a video of the interview. He pulled out the suit that he claims that he wore on that day, October 20th, 1967. And that was a suit that he wore for the famous Patterson-Gimlin film. And after this time, Bob H. and Bob Gimlin were neighbors. So while they were doing this interview, Bob Gimlin and Bob H. were still neighbors. And they lived next to each other.
Oh, no.
So 35 years later, Bob Gimlin and Bob H., they're still neighbors. And
wow. And now he's just gone and spilled the beans.
Yes. He is spilling some beans.
Wow.
He says that Bob H. says that Bob Gimlin does not acknowledge him when they see each other.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I mean, if I paid you $1,000 to keep your mouth shut for forever.
And then what about the mysteriousness of it all, you know?
Yeah.
He could have lived, they could have died with that secret.
They could have.
And we would have never known.
But like also, I guess he's like clearing his conscience or something. Mm. He's like, I'm a part of like this big scheme and that I know is a scheme, and I can get this off my chest. I'm old. You know, I might die tomorrow. You know, so I think that's what he, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he got his check and he was like, that's all I really wanted.
But Bob Gimlin is still alive, and Bob Gimlin still to this day claims that that video was authentic, and that what him and Roger seen that day on October 20th was an actual Lady Bigfoot. And they know it's a lady because it had breasts. Hairy breasts.
I don't believe him. Truly, I don't believe him, actually. I gotta say, it's pretty sketchy.
This is why I'm like, dang.
Yeah.
And so the next thing that makes it very crazy is that they're still neighbors. To this day.
Well, not anymore. Oh, yeah, they're both still there?
Yes. So Bob H. did an interview while he was still neighbors with Bob Gimlin. This was like recently. I think it was like, I would say like 2 or 3 years ago. And he says that like that was faked and that he was in that suit.
Why would they still live near each other?
I mean,
I know moving is, yeah, but do you think they have dinner together?
Well, Bob H. says that Bob Gimlin doesn't acknowledge him when he sees him. Like they can.
Do you think their kids trick or treat at each other's houses?
I think their kids are like our parents' age.
I mean, my parents, your parents don't trick or treat?
That is a topic for another, like another podcast. Long story short,
I forgot what we were talking about.
Okay, so there's another footage of Bigfoot, another popular like video of Bigfoot, and it's called the Freeman footage. Now, Paul Freeman was an American Bigfoot hunter who claimed to have discovered Bigfoot tracks showing dermal ridges. Now, I looked that up, and dermal ridges are basically fingerprints. So he said that he's seen these Bigfoot tracks that had ridges, I guess like footprints. Anyway, So the plaster casts Freeman subsequently made were convincing enough to be considered as critical evidence pieces by anthropologist Jeff Meldrum of Ohio State University, and we're bringing back Dr. Grover Krantz. He showed Dr. Grover Krantz, and they put this Bigfoot plaster in front of them, and they began to study them. And then again, on June 10th, 1982, Freeman reportedly sighted a Bigfoot near Walla Walla, Washington. Now, do you know where Walla Walla is?
No.
I think they make apples. I think they grow apples. Oh. But I know that from like a completely unrelated thing. Anyway, so on June 10th, 1982, Freeman reportedly sighted a Bigfoot near Walla Walla, Washington, which he described as being nearly 8 feet tall and covered in reddish-brown body hair. In 1994, Freeman captured a purported Bigfoot on videotape near the Blue Mountains region of northeastern Oregon. The recording is considered authentic by some Bigfoot investigators, but its resolution is too low to be considered conclusive by most. It was also spoofed many times in a Kokanee beer advertisement. So, Freeman ended up dying at his home in Airway Heights, Washington, at the age of 59 from complications with the diabetes. I just thought I should add that in.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace.
R.I.P. But if you fake that video, rest in distress.
R.I.D.
Now, about these footprints. I watched a lot of videos like explaining like why some of these Bigfoot footprints are Bigfoot footprints. And it's just not, I just think it's all fake. Because all of them look completely different. It doesn't look like... I know that, like, even people, we have different size feet and, like, different shapes. But, like, there's a common structure to all of our feet, you know? And I feel like with the Bigfoot feet that I seen, they were literally, like, they were just different. It's like some had, like, longer toes. Some had, like, six toes. And it's... I don't know.
Interesting.
And so, let's talk about a documentary that I watched about Bigfoot.
Let's do it.
I'm going to tell you why this video was a disappointment to me. I mean, this documentary was a disappointment to me. So, Sasquatch was the name of the documentary, and I watched it on Hulu. And I want to start this section of the podcast with saying this quote that appeared in the documentary. Quote, "The odor of this animal after I roll..." I can't even say it without laughing. "The odor of this animal after I rolled the window down was so offensive that I could not remain there any longer. This thing truly scared me." End quote. Now, the reason why I think it's really funny is because I've never heard someone describe a smell as offensive.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Like, your smell is offensive. I think you should get that checked out.
Yeah, that's rude.
Your smell is rude. You're being rude.
That's so rude. Imagine anyway. How Lady Bigfoot feels about that. How Lady Bigfoot feels.
Next topic. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so investigative journalist David Holthouse is on a mission to find out anything about the alleged 1993 murder of three men by a Sasquatch slash Bigfoot. So David said that he was staying with a friend in the Emerald Triangle of Northern California. Now, do you know what the Emerald Triangle is?
No, I'm not familiar.
Aren't you in Northern California?
I am indeed.
Okay, so the Emerald Triangle consists of Humboldt, Trinity, and Mendocino counties. So that's why, I guess that's why it's called the triangle, because it consists of three counties. Okay. It didn't look like a triangle to me. But Emerald Triangle is the largest cannabis producing region in the United States. And this region is also known to grow the best cannabis in the world.
That is so fascinating. Wow.
So I just, anyway.
That is a really great fun fact. That is more north than I am. I am below San Francisco, and that is above San Francisco.
Okay. Do you know how long it would take you to get there?
Most likely like three to four hours.
3 to 4 hours. It'll take me longer to get there. Anyway.
Just a bit.
Just a little bit. So he said that he was on a friend's cannabis farm, and that out of nowhere, these men come in and they're completely shooken up and scared. So one of the men is yelling frantically at David's friend, the friend who he's staying with, and says that he just came across the bodies of three dead men in a cannabis field. Oh. So David's friend keeps asking the man if he's sure that like a Sasquatch killed the men, and asks if the men are actually dead. So he assures them that the men are dead and they are also dismembered. So David was sitting on the couch for all of this, and he said that he was just trying to sink into the couch and not be seen at all. Because he said he was young and like he was scared out of his mind. So years later, he does this investigation and he starts to look for these missing people in the area. But when he's looking for them, he comes up empty handed. He can't find reports of like three missing men from October or November of 1993. He just can't find anyone that was missing during that time. Mm. So he hops on a call with one of his friends, and his friend gives him the name of a person, and he hops on the phone with the friend of the friend, and he says he might know a little bit more about the case. So they were talking about the case, and it comes up that he does indeed know about the case, and he says that the three men that were killed were Mexican nationals. So he points him in the direction of Spy Rock Road in Mendocino County. Now, Mendocino County is a part of that Emerald Triangle. Mm-hmm. And Spy Rock, fun fact, Spy Rock Road has one of the oldest engraved petroglyphs in all of the United States.
That's so fascinating.
And that was really cool. So David then finds out that Spy Rock Road is only 15 minutes from the cabin that he was staying in 1993. And Spy Rock Road is reported to be very dangerous, and they have shootings all the time, going back decades, a few decades. Mm. So Holthouse said that when he first got to the farms, that one of the jobs was to set and maintain booby traps, which is really, really cool. Like, booby traps in a weed farm. That's like a movie title.
Another band name.
Booby traps on a weed farm. Like, yeah. Like, come on. Like, anyway. So one of the booby traps that he was like known to like set was a fish line with fish hooks on it set at eye level, so that anyone who did not know that the fishing line with the fish hooks were on there, they would get hooked in the eyes.
Stop. Oh my gosh.
I know. I was like, that is like the scariest thing ever.
Like, my stomach just turned over. That was disgusting.
When I heard that, I was like, ugh. Crazy. And also, the reason why they were out there was because it would probably catch a Bigfoot. And they also had like some like game traps and motion sensors around the perimeter of the whole camp, whatever. So part of the reason, another part of the reason for doing this was because a government agency called CAMP would come and wipe out all of their plants. What? And so like 1 year of work could be destroyed in an entire afternoon.
That is horrible. What?
And so what do you think CAMP stands for? CAMP, just think about it. We're on a weed farm.
Cannabis Annihilators Municipality.
And the P?
Prejudice.
Prejudice. Okay, so this acronym, which I think is like so lame.
Yeah.
Campaign Against Marijuana Planting.
That's so lame. And so it was like not even correct. It's not even correct verbiage. That's so wild. I hate that.
I mean, it is a government agency.
There needs to be a whole episode on this. We're going to dismantle it board by board.
But I don't think it exists anymore because like...
No, I know, but we're still going to rip it to shreds.
Absolutely. Now, one of the solutions that David came up with was that... He thought it could be because of the racial tensions in the area and that like a white person probably killed or white people killed these three Mexican nationals because of racism. So if there were really three dead men on this weed farm, it could be because of white men and not a Bigfoot, which is kind of disappointing because like the point of the documentary was to prove that there was a Bigfoot. Anyway, long story short. David points out that one of the men or all of the men that came to the cabin that night could have been like just tweaking because he noted that they were known meth users. And so that he said these men could have just been tweaking and like didn't know what they were talking about because they were like high on meth. But I feel like that's kind of mean. Like, believe me.
Well, I mean... You never know what a crackhead is going to say or do.
Crackhead? You never know what a crackhead is going to say or do.
So, I don't know. That just kind of puts a little bit of a spin on the story for me, thinking that they might have been under the influence of some heavy drugs.
Yeah. And then my question when I first like started thinking about this documentary, I was just thinking like, why don't he just like find an interview... the men that came into the cabin that night. And at this point in the documentary, he says, quote, let me find the quote actually. He says, quote, tweakers don't have a long shelf life.
Okay. How do you think he would have said that?
I mean, I feel like he's like referring to them like they're just like cans of okra.
Tweakers don't have a long shelf life, man.
So after making some more calls, he came across this man, and this unnamed man agrees to sit down and talk to David. This man tells David that members of the bike gang called Hell's Angels were responsible for the murder of the three Mexican nationals on the weed farm in 1993.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I know. Never heard of the Hell's Angels. Wow.
I have not. So the Hell's Angel group set up shop on Spy Rock Road. When David asks other people in the area about this unnamed man, they all refuse to talk about him. David ends up getting the number of the unnamed man that we're talking about and talks to him about the triple homicide. He says that he knows nothing about the murders and that David needs to stop asking that question. And right after he says that, he hangs up the phone.
Oh.
Which I'm like, rude. So you obviously have something to do with this murder of these three Mexican men in the sweet farm.
Right. That's not suspicious at all.
It is not suspicious at all. And so after that, he started looking. He started looking. So to me, right now, this is starting to look more like a human murder than a Bigfoot murder.
Mm-hmm.
And after exploring different angles, he comes to the conclusion that it was a member of the Hell's Angel gang that killed the three Mexican men on that day in 1993. And the person that he thinks, like, was in charge of the murder, that person's name was, can you guess it?
Lady Bigfoot.
His name was Bigfoot, the man who ordered. They called him Bigfoot Gary.
No, and you for real?
Yeah, they called him Bigfoot Gary. And so he then starts thinking about the guys that came in, and they could have just been like, they could have said, Bigfoot killed these men, or a Bigfoot killed this man. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. No.
So these men could have been walking in saying, meaning Bigfoot Gary killed these men. But David, who has no idea about Bigfoot Gary, just hears the word Bigfoot.
Now, see, why would you do that?
And he starts assuming that it was an actual Bigfoot that killed and dismembered these three Mexican men. When in actuality, it could have just probably been Bigfoot Gary.
You know, I'm starting to think that all of these guys are high on meth. Because,
and so, needless to say, this whole documentary led me on a wild goose chase.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm so glad that you gave me that review, because I'm not going to give it a... not going to give it a watch.
And also, David interviewed this, I think, it said that they were life partners. So I'm assuming that they're a gay couple, because like that's how people label gay people. They were life partners. Anyway, mm-hmm. And their names were Wayne and George.
Wayne and George.
They both believed in Bigfoot. And I can't remember which one it was. One of them said to the other, well, you believe Bigfoot can teleport. And the other was like, no, I didn't. Stop twisting my words. And he's like, you believe Bigfoot can teleport. And they're just like going at it. And so to me, it seemed like they hated each other.
Oh my gosh. How old were they?
They were like an old couple. They had been together for like a long time.
That's sweet.
And one of them was like, you think Bigfoot can teleport? And the other's like, no, I don't. What are you talking about? And they're like, they just like, this is what they're arguing about. That's literally so all of their interview.
Oh my gosh.
And so that talk about Bigfoot led me to do some more research on another mythical creature.
Okay.
Quote unquote mythical creature.
Another cryptid
called Yeti. So the Yeti is an ape-like creature purported to inhabit the Himalayan mountain range in Asia. In Western popular culture, the creature is commonly just referred to as the Abominable Snowman, which I always thought that the Abominable Snowman and the Yeti were two different things for some reason. I don't know. Anyway, so many dubious articles have been offered in attempt to prove the existence of the Yeti, including anecdotal and visual sightings, disputed video recordings, photographs, and plaster casts of large footprints. Again, here we go with these plaster casted footprints.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these are speculated and some of them are known to be hoaxes. So some people are like, I think that's a hoax. And others are like, yeah, that's definitely a hoax. These footprints and all these photographs and all these recordings and all these sightings. Mm.
For some reason, to me, the way that it's been presented, it seems like in this case, there's only one, you know? So it would be pretty easy to spot a hoax if it wasn't matching up to the consistent data of the Yeti, you know?
But I'm thinking that it's a Yeti, like a Yeti family, you know? What if it's a Yeti family?
Aww. In that case, there's probably going to be some more Yetis.
I know. Like, that's what I'm, yeah.
But maybe it's just one family forever.
They just don't die.
Yeah.
Folklorists trace the origin of the Yeti to a combination of factors, including Sherpa folklore and misidentified fauna, such as bear or yak. The Yeti is commonly compared to Bigfoot in North America for obvious reasons, as the two subjects often have, have similar physical descriptions. I guess one is white and one is brown. Like me and you.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
You're the Yeti and I'm the Bigfoot.
Paranormal activity.
I love that. Anyway, that's amazing. So the Russian government. Go ahead.
I was wondering, do you think that they're actually related? Like, do you think there's actually, do you think they're related in some way?
I feel like they're related in the same way that me and an Asian person are related.
Okay, so kind of like how I was saying earlier, like trees. Like, there's different types of trees in different places. So it's just kind of like a different, maybe like cousins.
Cousins. Mm-hmm. Cousins. I like that. So the Russian government took interest in the Yeti in 2011, and then they organized a conference of Bigfoot experts in Western Siberia. So Bigfoot researcher and biologist John Bindernagel claimed that he saw evidence that the Yeti not only existed, but also built nests and shelters out of twisted tree branches. So that group made headlines around the world when they issued a statement that they had indisputable proof of the Yeti. And they were 95% sure it existed based on some gray hairs found in a clump of moss in a cave.
Wow. Huh.
I know, right? So Bindernagel may have been impressed, but another scientist who participated in the same expedition concluded that the indisputable evidence was hoax. Jeff Meldrum, who we talked about before, a professor of anatomy and an anthropologist at Idaho State University, who endorses the existence of Bigfoot, said that he suspected the twisted tree branches had been faked. Not only were there obvious evidences of tool-made cuts in the supposedly Yeti twisted branches, but also the trees were conveniently located just off of a well-traveled trail and hardly in a remote area. So he's saying that, I don't think this is true, because why would a Yeti sit here and set up a nest?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And by a trail that people are known to use.
Yeah, that's pretty far-fetched.
And so, and this is coming from like someone who believes that like the Bigfoot and the Yeti exists. So I'm like, okay.
I kind of feel like, so do you remember the story of Dietlof Pass?
I do, which we should cover.
We definitely should cover. There's a lot of interesting details that have to do with that story. But obviously I feel like personally, my humble onion, that the Russian government knew more about what was going on in that situation and that there was something else in the woods, personally.
So you're saying that there's a Yeti?
I'm saying that the government knows. They know. So
the Russian government knows what it's putting out.
I'm inclined to believe them when they say that they have evidence that something is in the mountains, you know?
Interesting. So Jeff Meldrum concluded that the whole Russian expedition was more of a publicity stunt than a serious scientific endeavor.
Boo.
This was likely designed to increase tourism in the impoverished coal mining region.
Tourism.
Despite the quasi-official claims of indisputable proof of the Yeti, nothing more has come of the story.
Oh, wow.
So the question of the hour, Justin. Does Bigfoot exist?
Does Bigfoot exist?
Does Bigfoot exist?
Shoot us an email at... I'm just kidding. What do you think? Are we?
What do I
Are
think?
we? Should we discuss? Are we going to discuss our opinions about it? Do you want to discuss your opinion about it?
Yeah, let's discuss our opinions about it.
Okay. So most of the time when you were talking, first of all, when you said that he didn't have a neck, I got like a really gnarly impression of like a giant gnome that was just like really hairy, and like.
Justin, stop.
Anyways, I feel like I've seen so many impressions of Bigfoot, and there's this show, We Bare Bears, that has a Bigfoot character, and he's just this like super friendly guy, but he has to hide from people because he's famous. And it's hilarious. And then there's the Yeti, the Yeti from
Yeah.
Monsters, Inc. And at this point, like these urban legends or cryptids, they've just become like they're real because we make them real, and they're probably
Okay.
based on some kind of truth, but
Yeah.
we put those names on them and those labels, and then there's like, oh, this could be that, and this could be that, and this could be that, and so there's lots of gray areas.
Honestly, I am split 50-50. Because I do feel like there are creatures out there that have not been discovered by humans. But also, I feel like a lot of the evidence that we do have is not actual evidence. I just think it's all BS, honestly.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of BS out there.
And so is there a possibility of there being a Bigfoot or a Yeti? I think so. Do I think we have any evidence of it existing? No. Maybe, I don't know, maybe. But I just think most of the evidence that we have to back up the claims of a Bigfoot or a Yeti being real is not credible evidence. But there could be. And if we discover one, I won't be surprised. And if we don't discover one, I won't be surprised, you know? That's how I feel.
Well, you heard it here first, folks.
You heard it here first, folks.
Thanks for quacking
Yo.
around.
Thanks for quacking with us.
Thanks for quacking with us. Quack back next time, please. Also, if you want to reach out to us with some personal Bigfoot stories or just
Yes.
some honestly anything, you can email us at paranormalcracktivitypodcast@gmail.com. And by the time this episode comes out, we will have our Instagram up and running. That's Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast. And you can shoot us a DM there. We're going to post some pictures as the episodes come out to keep you guys updated. So I think that's all I have. Do you have anything, Treek?
I have nothing else. Let us know what you think. Send us an email.
Yeah, we'd love
Is
to know what you
Bigfoot
think. We'd
real?
love to know.
Actually, don't send us an email. Send us a DM. Do both if you're inclined to, actually.
Call us, fax us, send us a mail, send us a carrier pigeon. Quack on over.
Quack on over.
All right, get your ducks in a row. Have a great day. Don't do quack.
Do not do quack. Crackheads.
And signing off, this is Justin.
This is Dreek. So folklorists trace the origin of the Yeti to a combination of factors, including Let me try that again. So folklorists trace the origin of the Yeti to a combination of factors, including the Sherpa. Justin, I am so sorry. Please take this out. Please take it out. Please take it out.
Love it. The Sherpa for